Thank you, Mr. Miller. That special music was indeed special, especially to my untrained ears. It sounded wonderful. There are a couple of young'uns in the row behind us that were singing their hearts out. It was wonderful to hear. Very, very wonderful. Thank you for that. Speaking of thanks, I want to thank Mr. Light very much for taking my speaking spot last week while I was out ill. It was greatly appreciated. And I also want to thank any of the other speakers that had to scramble their schedule around to make that possible. If that was the case, I'm very grateful. I'm still on the road to recovery. Mr. Scott's still working on my warp drive, but the impulse seems to be working pretty well, so maybe in another week or so I'll be back up to full song. Anyway, to begin the message, my wife and I have recently been, in the course of spending some evenings together over dinner, we've been watching, going back through some of our old movie collection and kind of watching movies here and there. And we had occasion here not too long ago to go through our old Star Trek movies, the ones with Kirk and Spock and McCoy, the originals, the real deal, okay? Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner and all those people. And one of the movies we watched recently was the number 4 version of Star Trek called The Voyage Home. Now in that, there was a scene in particular toward the beginning where an alien probe had come to Earth and it was investigating why the people that sent the probe, or whoever they might have been, had lost contact with the humpback whale population on Earth, okay? And in the course of this investigation, it was sending this incredibly powerful communication wave into Earth's oceans, trying to reach them. And these waves were of such power that they were vaporizing the oceans, okay? So Earth became completely encased in cloud cover. And it was causing critical damage to the planet at this point. Well, during the course of this emergency, the Federation ambassador had been talking with Vulcan Ambassador Sarek. And they were discussing what to do. And Ambassador Sarek said something to the Federation ambassador at one point. He said, "Perhaps we should send a planetary distress signal while we still have time." And in the movie, sending that distress signal ultimately did save the planet from destruction. As Captain Kirk so succinctly put it, "Once again, we've saved civilization as we know it." You know, he wasn't bashful with expressing himself or anything like that. But in all of that, there was that one phrase that had caught my attention. "While we still have time." That's the title of the message today. While we still have time. Now, time is a subject I've talked about before, but I want to bring it up again because it is always important to us to think about time in terms of our Christian lives, how we're living our lives, okay? Brethren, how much time do we have left? How much time before the return of Christ? How much time do we have to get our act together, so to speak? And what are we doing with that time? How are we using it? Are we using it to prepare for what may and what will come down the road, both physically and spiritually? You know, we tend to hear about this subject talked a lot around the Feast of Trumpets and the Fall Holy Days. We discuss at that time the urgency of preparing for the return of Jesus Christ to this earth in power and glory and might. But are we urgent only during the Fall Holy Days? Are we urgent only during trumpets? You know, we are told we must be ready in season and out of season. As Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy 4 and verse 2, I'll just refer to that. He told Timothy to be always ready to preach the word. Because realistically, again, how much time do we have left? Do we know? Does anyone know? No. The answer is no. God himself said no. Not even his son, Jesus Christ, knows. Only the Father. If we take a good look at what's going on around us, does it not seem like end-time events are accelerating, going faster? Let me put this subject another way. Is overcoming our human nature, overcoming temptation, overcoming Satan the devil and his minions and his methodologies, the nature of society, is overcoming a priority for us? Are we taking the time to build and acquire and learn to use and ultimately do use the spiritual tools necessary to do these things, to overcome? Are we taking the time to learn how to use these tools effectively so that we will succeed in overcoming? So again, I want to talk about this subject today of how we use our time with emphasis on spiritual growth, preparation, and readiness. I want to talk about how we use our time. The Apostle Paul in the New Testament had something to say about how we use the time we're given. And I'd like to begin here. Let's go to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verses 15 and 16. We'll begin here. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 and 16. Ephesians 5, verse 15. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise. Verse 16. Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Now I want to look at two words specifically here. The word circumspectly and the word redeem. The word circumspectly in the approximate Greek pronunciation is akribos. And that's G199 in Strong's words, Strong's dictionary. And it essentially means diligently, accurately, or carefully. Circumspectly. Diligently, accurately, or carefully. So according to Paul, that is how we need to be walking in our Christian walk. Diligently, accurately, and carefully. The word redeem, and as we used in verse 16, is the Greek word exagorazo, and that's G1805 in Strong's dictionary. And that word means to buy up for oneself, redeem, to buy up for oneself or to rescue from loss. To buy up from oneself or to rescue from loss. So according to Vine's Expository Dictionary, to redeem time is to make, quote, the best of every opportunity, turning each opportunity to the best advantage, since none can be recalled if missed. Now, isn't that true of opportunities? You know, once an opportunity is gone, it's gone. That's it. Game over. What did we do with it? What kind of an accounting can we give? You know, Benjamin Franklin once said, "Do you love life? Then do not squander time. For time is the stuff life is made of." And I mentioned this before, but I want to mention it again because it had quite an impact on me. I had a coworker once who was actually an administrator, and he left his computer unlocked when he left to go to a meeting or something. One of the IT staff snuck in and decided to teach him and everybody in the agency a lesson. He emailed to everyone in the office the following: "Time flies like the wind, fruit flies like bananas." Yeah, it takes a minute, doesn't it? It twists your head a little bit, but it made an impact on me, especially the first part, time flies like the wind, because there is a point to that. Time goes by very, very quickly, and it will pass by us if we allow it to. And that's especially true if an Ed-ism is practiced. Time flies when you throw the alarm clock. I feel that way every morning when I get out of bed to go to work. No. Work is a blessing. It really is. I'm very thankful to have a job. But still, there's those mornings it's like, oh, I don't want to get up. But we deal with it. We work with it. To quote Mr. Franklin again, he also once said that lost time is never found again. So you see the point. Time is an important resource. It is a precious commodity in our lives. It is, in fact, a non-renewable resource. Once spent, it is never found again or regenerated again. Time is always going forward, always going forward. But again, why do we, as Christians, need to be so concerned with how we use our time, particularly in a spiritual sense? We alluded to it at the beginning. But I want to go next to John chapter 15, John chapter 15 and verse 16. John chapter 15 and verse 16. John chapter 15 and verse 16. This is Jesus Christ talking to his disciples, and he said the following: "You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he may give you." Again, he spoke this to his disciples who were with him at the time. They were to go out and follow in his footsteps. Well, we too, brethren, are his disciples, and we have a job to do as well. We are to be bearing fruit. We are to gain a quality product with the time that God gives us. We are to be an example of what God and Jesus Christ are like. And we, of course, cannot do that without God. And for that, we must spend time with him, to take some of the time that we have been given and make good use of it. Redeem it. Jesus Christ spoke of this, his use of time, during his tenure on this earth in Luke chapter 2. Back a few pages. Luke chapter 2 and verse 49. Luke chapter 2 and verse 49. And he said to them, "Why did you seek me?" Speaking to his parents. "Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business?" Did you not know that I must be about my Father's business? Well, brethren, we too are about our Father's business. How does that apply to us? What might that look like, being about our Father's business? At least in part. Well, our work here, again, is to become Christ-like, to overcome those things that would cause us to fall short of that. We need to be growing in grace and knowledge, putting on the mind and heart of Christ, truly being his disciples and emulating him. You know, we've heard these things before. We know and understand these things. But we need to be making sure that his light shines through us to the world around us, developing and putting on holy, righteous character. In this way, we can, with our example, teach God to those around us, the way of God. And why do we need to be doing this? This is part and parcel of our preparation, of readiness to meet Jesus Christ at his return, and to be able to take our places as kings and priests in the kingdom of God. You know, these things we'll be teaching others to do too, so that those who follow can shine the light of God. You know, again, we know these things. But how can we do this if we're not taking the time to learn how and taking the time to practice that way and make it a part of our very core, our very essence, our very being? Because there is a night coming for the world. We know that. There will be a night coming, and there's a night coming for us as well. So we too must be about our Father's business while we still have time. You know, for most of us, time management is a four-letter word, so to speak. It's a wish list item, as in, I wish I could. I know I've viewed it that way on many occasions. But in Mr. Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, perhaps you've heard of this book, he notes something profound about how we use time, about what time could mean to us. He says, quote, "Time management is a misnomer. The challenge is not to manage time, but to manage ourselves. The key is not to prioritize what's on your schedule, but to schedule your priorities," end quote. Manage ourselves. That's a pretty tall order. At least it is for me. That's probably where the biggest battle is, isn't it? But, you know, as far as time management, quote-unquote, goes, there are probably as many methods out there as there are stars in the sky. And sometimes we'll just have to go through different ones, see which one might work for us. But we need to be dedicated to the process, right? So here's what this whole thing boils down to, okay? What are your priorities? What are your priorities? What is most important each day? Is it time with God? Is it prayer, Bible study, Bible reading, meditation, fasting when we need to? Are those priorities there? You know, schedule those priorities. Be sure that they are scheduled to happen each day. Put them in the order they need to be in. Again, what is most important each day? You know, those things that enhance and build our relationship with God should be at the top of the list. We can look at an example in the Bible. Jesus Christ gave a parable of this one individual. And I want to look at it in terms of how time is used. And in this case, I think you'll see it's how not to use your time. Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, I want to start in verse 16. Luke 12 and verse 16. We'll read to verse 21. Luke chapter 12 and verse 16. Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'Well, what shall I do since I have no room to store my crops?' So he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him in verse 20, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided?' Verse 21, 'So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God.'" That's one of the many lessons we can pull from this parable. But again, I want to look at this parable in terms of the use of time. Think about how this one used his time. What did he spend his time on? Himself. His ease, his future ease. He was working toward that, what he could lay up for himself. And he was forgetting God and others and what he did and what he thought and what he spent his time on. We, brethren, must make a conscious effort to consider what we spend our time on. You know, there's so many distractions out there. We all know that. There's TV, there's spending too much time on our leisure pursuits. That's one I personally have to watch out for constantly. Those little projects and hobbies that we might, if we're not careful, spend too much time on. You know, our smartphones, I've talked about this before too, social media. Facebook comes to mind right away. You know, they're all useful and wonderful tools. They're wonderful for staying in touch and communicating with others. You know, they're wonderful tools, but they have to be used properly, right? You know, fellowshipping a la internet, that kind of thing. Those are good things. But as I've said before, social media can be a lot like alcohol. You know, it's wonderful stuff in moderation, but it can be abused. And we have to be careful. We have to be careful. Because it can become a vortex, and all of a sudden, all your time is being taken up with it. It can suck you in. You know, and when these things happen, are you redeeming the time? Are we redeeming the time? Are we using the time constructively and carefully? You know, it's just something to consider, you know. Just something to consider. Are our time-saving devices really saving us time? You know, that kind of thing. My wife pointed out to me one time that every time I buy something new, it becomes a project. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. So I got this project I haven't finished, and this project, and all of a sudden I've got all these projects, and that's what I'm thinking about. Where's my time going? I'm thinking about my projects. It's very easy to become distracted, isn't it? Very easy to take us away from the important things. We have to take an honest look at the things that take up our time each day. Analyze them, and perhaps see whether they contribute, whether they're uplifting and building and productive and constructive, or if they take away, if they're getting in the way of the weightier matters of loving God and loving neighbor in the way we spend our time. And while we have to make sure, brethren, that the most important priorities are scheduled in our day, it's also important to remember to incorporate and make room for what you might call a little downtime occasionally. You know, there has to be balance. We have to remember that good time management, again, quote unquote, is a balance. In an article one time that Mr. Don Hooser wrote, it's in the 2010 UCG article called Time Flies, How to Make the Most of It, he said, quote, God does not want us to be workaholics. He wants us to take the time to enjoy the good things as well, to stop and smell the roses, as it were. We need to remember, brethren, to take time to enjoy the good things that God has brought into our lives. And those things can most certainly be both physical and spiritual. So again, what are we doing with our lives? Especially when, if ever, there's idle time in your day, for example. If there is, consider the wise use of it. You know, what can be done with a few minutes here and there, you know, while you're waiting for something, whatever it might be. If you're waiting in line at the store, for example, you know, instead of, you know, let's just say, you know, looking at all those crazy magazines they have on either side of the aisle before you get up the register, and you're scratching your head going, how can they print that stuff? You could be thinking about perhaps, you know, you could meditate on something good from a Bible passage that you read, perhaps, or a hymn, or, you know, something uplifting, you know, while you're standing there in line waiting. You can also spend that time on others. You know, think about someone who's in need, perhaps. Someone who's in need of healing. A shut-in, maybe. Or say a little prayer for someone while you're there in line before you get to the register. Just an example. You know, intercessory prayer, you know, praying for or on behalf of another person or people, is a wonderful and productive use of that idle time. It puts God and the one you're praying for first in your thoughts. It's a constructive, beneficial, uplifting use of time. It's service and love to them. We can do that. So we can think, we can meditate on God and his ways, you know, while we wait for the oil to be changed in our car or whatever it might happen to be. I want to go to Psalm 63. Psalm 63 and verse 6. Psalm 63. In verse 6. Psalm 63 and verse 6. Something David told us. He says, when I remember you on my bed, I meditate on you in the night watches. And there's something similar in Psalm 119 and verse 148. I'll just refer to it, Psalm 119, 148. He says, my eyes are awake through the night watches that I may meditate on your word. This is something David did in his downtime, you know, perhaps while he was trying to go to sleep or something. Of course, in that situation, it was probably hard for him to go to sleep. He was in the wilderness of Judah there, and he knew that King Saul was out to get him. And it can be hard to sleep when you know that somebody's trying to breathe down your throat. But, you know, when we have trouble falling asleep, when something's weighing heavily on our minds, this is one example of something we could do, perhaps. And let's look at another good example now of wisely using time. And this one, in the face of evil, in the face of evil. In Daniel chapter 6 and verse 10, we see an example of a very wise use of time. Daniel 6 and verse 10. See here, the backstory, as most of us know, is that the governors that he worked with in the kingdom of Babylon were jealous of him, essentially. Daniel was making them look bad, and they wanted to do him in. So they knew that he took the time to worship his God every day, right? And so they, in their brotherly love for their fellow Daniel, they more or less suckered King Darius to sign a law that would do Daniel in. Okay? But notice how Daniel responded to that. Daniel 6 and verse 10. Daniel 6 and verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees three times that day and had himself a scotch because he couldn't handle the stress. Now, of course, we know not what it says. No. He prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days. See, in part, because of his dedication to God in this way, when Daniel's faith was tested later on in the cave with the lions, he was ready. He was prepared. And God delivered him, didn't he? So what of us? When our faith is tested, and it will be, as we know, will we be prepared to face the trial? Will we have taken the time to prepare as Daniel did? Will we be ready? Because no matter what, Daniel always made time for God. That's the example here. He took opportunity every day to talk with his father. It was a priority for him, and he scheduled this priority in his life. Every day, three times a day. You know, there's a saying, there's many sayings, but there's this saying. The bad news is that time flies. The good news is that you're the pilot. And it's attributed to a man named Michael Altschul. You know, we get the choice, brethren, of how we spend our time. We're in control. We are in control of how we use the time we're given. And it's a big responsibility. It's a big responsibility. You know, part of a good use of time is gaining wisdom in it, knowing the value of time. Proverbs 4 and verse 7, I'll just refer to it, tells us that wisdom is the principal thing. Get wisdom, and all you're getting, get wisdom. With wisdom, you will know the value of time. Now, I want to note something interesting here, too, in all this talk about time. God made time for us. Again, I've talked about this before, but I want to look at it again. God made time for us. He created time for us to move through, and he created time for us so we can have reference points. If we go back to the Genesis account, we can see this. Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. And we'll start with verse 3, the beginning of the creation account here. Genesis chapter 1 and verse 3. Then God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness. Verse 5, God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. So the evening and the morning were the first day. So this was created on the earth for all the creatures that would live on the earth. We would have day and night, first two reference points. Now if we skip down to verse 14 of Genesis 1, verse 14, then God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years." Verse 15, "And let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth," and it was so. So by creating these things, God gave us time and a way to tell time. And we can consider that as well in the light of the book of Leviticus, where God's holy days are laid out, and they are mapped out for us, noting very specifically when they are to be kept. And we have a way to do that because of the things that God has created. The timepieces, if you will, that God has created. Does God tell time? Does God tell time? Does God need time as we know it? Does he need a Rolex? I'm going to look at a couple five verses here, I guess, that tell us a little bit about this. You can just jot them down if you want, because they're kind of all over the place. But I want to start with 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. 2 Peter 3 and verse 8. Pardon my laziness. I think I'm just going to read them from my notes here. 2 Peter 3 and verse 8. But beloved, do not forget this one thing. With the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. One day, 1,000 years, 1,000 years, one day. Psalm chapter 90 and verse 4 says something very similar. Psalm chapter 90 and verse 4 says, for 1,000 years in your sight are like yesterday when it's past, and like a watch in the night. You know, these couple of verses here and some verses in other places, they reveal to us and remind us of the eternal and everlasting nature of our God. Now, to continue this thought, in Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 3, Hebrews 7 and verse 3, I am going to turn to that. The nature of Jesus Christ as the Word is described to us. Hebrews 7 and verse 3. Breaking into the account here, Hebrews 7 and verse 3 is without father, without mother, without genealogy, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like the Son of God, remains a priest continually. Okay, and as we know in John 1 and verse 1, I will just mention that, refer that, so you can put that in your notes if you want. We know that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. It was the beginning for us, the beginning of the account that we know. So by these verses, it is clear that God and Jesus Christ, his Son, do not see time the way that we do. They are eternal. They are always. They are forever. Now, for now, we in this life are given a temporary existence, a finite amount of time to live and to learn. And we know that. We are temporary. We are finite as of this point. And with this time, we are to be about our Father's business. Okay? Really, in comparison, if we want to make a comparison with the lifespans here, we really have not even a very small speck of time to live our lives, maybe not even the point of a pin, perhaps, in comparison, you know? A very small speck of time to live our lives, to do what we need to do to be about our Father's business. And I think David realized the enormity of this in Psalm chapter 39. I want to go there to kind of reinforce this. Psalm chapter 39. Psalm chapter 39, and verses 4 and 5, David was reflecting on his life and his temporary nature. Psalm 39, and verse 4, he said, Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age as nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but vapor. We're very temporary right now, very finite. We have a very limited amount of time in our lives to be about our Father's business, to overcome and be a disciple of Jesus Christ. You know, Solomon noticed this too in Ecclesiastes 9, verses 11 and 12. I'll just refer to those for you. But he noted that time and chance happen to all. Again, we're temporary. We're finite. And he said that man does not know his time. We don't know how much time we have on this earth. You know, we're linear creatures. Physical linear creatures. And we need time to move through. And again, God gives us a limited amount of time to do that. To live, learn, to use. You know, how are we redeeming that time? What are we doing with it? You know, again, you can't make up lost time. We discussed that. You know, it's like trying to make up lost sleep. It really can't be done. You can just sleep more going forward. So again, what do we do with our day? How do we use it? You know, no discussion of how we use our time in this life would be complete without looking at the parable of the 10 virgins. Many of us are familiar with that parable, but I want to go through it. Matthew chapter 25. There is such a spiritual important message here of watching, of readiness, of preparation. How can we do that without spending the time to do it? Matthew 25 and verse 1. I'm going to go ahead and go through this through verse 13. Matthew 25 and verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Why? Why were 5 wise and 5 foolish? Verse 3. Those who were foolish took their lamp and took no oil with them. I think we understand those lamps. That is the Spirit of God in them. They took no oil with them, no fuel. But the wise, in verse 4, took oil in their vessels with their lamps. 5 had taken the time to properly prepare, to be ready for the occasion. They scheduled this priority, as it were, and they made certain it was part of their daily lives. And 5 took their ease, apparently. They let their time be consumed with other concerns, perhaps. Nevertheless, they did not gather oil for their lamp. Verse 5, but while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. All of them slept, okay? Verse 6, and at midnight a cry was heard, behold, the bridegroom is coming, go out to meet him. So suddenly it happened. All of a sudden, the event was here. It's time. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, no, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves. You know, I'm sorry that you were here not prepared for the occasion. Now you're going to have to go out and spend extra time to get yourself ready. Verse 10, while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins, who had taken extra time to go out and get themselves prepared, came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered and said, assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. And then Jesus Christ finishes this parable by saying, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. Again, nobody knows except the Father. But as this parable indicates, it takes time to be ready. 5 of them knew this, and they used the time they were given in a wise manner. Consider the consequences of not being spiritually ready. We can. You know, we note what happened to the 5 who did not prepare, who were considered foolish in this parable, those who failed to take the time to prepare, to be ready when the time came. You know, the inference here is that they were all informed ahead of time before this even took place, and they were all given time to prepare. 5 used the time wisely, 5 did not. Of all the doors we will encounter in our existence, is that really the one that we want shut in our faces? To be permanently separated from God and Jesus Christ? I think not. So will we take the time to learn and do the will of God? To be about our Father's business every day. Every day. Will we take the time to be ready? Will I take the time to be ready? Will I be spiritually dedicated enough to my Father in heaven to say, yes, I love you, I will do this. I made a commitment to you, and I'm going to do this. Will we be there when the call comes? You know, as Mr. Light mentioned in his message last Sabbath, the waypoints of prophecy. He asked, how's our spiritual preparation going? Are we repenting? Are we changing each day? You know, if we're not right with God, it's not going to matter in the end. Preparation, repentance, and change, if we're not dedicating quality time to these things, most likely they're not going to happen. They're not going to happen. Brethren, we know a good relationship with God or anyone else takes sincere effort and time sincerely spent. We cannot squander the time by being bystanders or fence-sitters, if you will. You know, Paul admonishes us in the book of Romans, Romans chapter 13, and verse 11 and 12. Romans chapter 13, verses 11 and 12. Breaking into his discussion, he says, and do this knowing the time, you know, and do this being the will of God, you know, practice it, make it part of your lives, get prepared, ready yourselves, do this, knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. The night is far spent, the day is at hand, therefore let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Take the time to put on and practice godliness. Take the time to put on your armor. Time is short. We need to do this while we still have time. Brethren, as we've seen, to redeem the time, we must use it wisely, with balance and moderation. We must consider carefully what we do with it. It's a precious resource, as we said before, a non-renewable resource. And consider, what is the most important thing we must be doing with the time we're given? Spending time with our God, taking time to do that which is pleasing to Him, taking time to pray, study, meditate, fast when we need to, learn God. Learn His law, learn His principles, practice them. We need to take time to build our relationship with Him and each other every day. Solomon spoke much of this, much of time, in the book of Ecclesiastes, where he noted that to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. As the called out ones of God, this is our time. This is our season. This is our time to grow in grace and knowledge. It is our time to prepare for what is coming. We've had our eyes opened. We've been given that gift, that blessing. We've been warned of the things to come. We're the ones being judged now. Will we be ready? Will the way we spend our time bear good fruit? Again, time is precious. Every day, and time is short. Again, will we be ready when our Master returns? Will our product be pleasing to Him? Will we be kings and priests when Christ returns? Will we be there with Him? Will we be among the five wise virgins? Or will we bury the talent? Will we not take the time? Will we say, I've got too much going on in my life, I can't do this? You know, when the time comes, we'd probably like to hear from our Lord, you used the time I gave you well. Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord. We as God's called out ones have a responsibility to take the time, to redeem the time, to grow and change and overcome and make ourselves ready. In Revelation 19 and verse 7, I'll just refer, says, "Let us be glad and rejoice and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready." That's us, the body, the ecclesia, each one of us. This is where we want to be when the time comes. Again, we have a duty to God and to our future husband to take the time to prepare ourselves, to make ourselves ready. Brethren, the clock is running. While we still have time, let's make sure we're preparing ourselves, making ourselves disciples of Jesus Christ, making ourselves ready for the role we will be given in the kingdom of God and beyond. Let's redeem the time we've been given and put our priorities where they need to be. Schedule those priorities. Make the most of today and every day. While we still have time.